This City Wire podcast is sponsored by Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust. Scottish Mortgage invests in some of the world's most promising and exceptional companies, from healthcare breakthroughs to electric vehicles to a green energy revolution. Scottish Mortgage takes stakes in businesses shaping our future economy and society. Scottish Mortgage is considered the flagship trust of Edinburgh-based investment managers Baillie Gifford and is the UK's largest investment trust. As with any investment, please note capital is at risk. To find out more, please visit scottishmortgageit.com.
Hello, my name is John Schaefer and welcome to The Wealth Show from CityWire. In this episode, I spoke with Newton's chief executive, Ewan Munro, about whether the asset management industry's approach to mental health has changed. Ewan also speaks about managing stress in high-pressure roles and why poor physical health is often a precursor to a dip in his mental well-being.
Q1 was obviously a pretty exceptionally challenging period for fund managers. And how does Newton as a business help staff deal with that stress?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that we've got is we've got a kind of mental health first aiders program. So we kind of do have a bunch of people who are skilled to deal with people who are in a crisis should that happen. There's also quite a big program of wellness material available on the Newton / Bank of New York Mellon website and so on. So people are able to access a whole load of those techniques and so on for maintaining mental wellness. But I think myself and the exec, what we try and do is through communication, encourage people to feel it's okay to admit to and to act on getting better when they have a mental health problem. And so one of the major issues one of the major programs we've been rolling out recently is a sort of website called Human at Newton that's been rolled out by the team, where it's effectively video blogs or vlogs or whatever you call these things of people talking about crisis that they've been through and how it's
what's the reaction been like to those?
I think it's been very positively received. I think people do feel that there's a recognition that my own perception of when I've never had serious depression or seen a serious mental illness myself, but I did recently do a blog about how it impacted on my family, because my mum didn't have a good lockdown and started having psychotic incidents and so on. So I shared that with the business and we talked about it. And she's responded very well after treatment. So it's kind of, these things are treatable. Their illness is the same as physical ailments. Get help when you sort of find that you're in this sort of situation. So, but I think, for me, where you get closest to the edge, it's when things you can't control are impacting you in sort of quite a material way. And that happens all the time in markets,
yeah.
where you're doing your best to pick stocks and then Putin goes into Ukraine and, kind of things go crazy and you've got no control over it. And so it's, I think it's talking about these things and explaining that, we have to make the best decisions we can on the information that's available, but we are, to some extent, the victim of random events that can, sometimes make us look like chumps. And so talking about it, being open about it. And I think as well, myself, from an exec point of view, I do regular blogs. Part of it is talking about coping with things we can't control. Part of it is also, frankly, I tell stories from everyday life. And I think sometimes people in senior positions like to present an image of nothing ever goes wrong for me. I'm sort of polished and perfect and, kind of all of that sort of thing. And I actually think talking about some of the things that have gone wrong, flights missed, meetings I've not performed at, whatever, just explaining that not everything goes super well, even when you're the CEO. I think that does help people.
Do you think that makes you more approachable as a CEO?
I think it does. It makes you feel more approachable, certainly. I think that's borne out. I don't think there's too many people in the business don't feel they can approach me or speak to me. But I also think it kind of gives people, I think, the correct impression that in life there are no people who breeze through it without incident and without being inconvenienced by random factors.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to your comments about your mother having some struggles over the pandemic. I mean, how did you personally deal with that in a sort of support role? You've obviously got a really intense job going on. And, you know, that, again, is something that's pretty much outside of your control.
Yeah.
You know, how do you manage such a challenging role whilst having other things in your personal life sort of being an extra challenge to you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's where, you know, the support of broader family. I'm fortunate. I'm not dealing with it on my own. I've got, you know, my wife was able to lean in, as were my brothers and their wives. So it was one of these things that together we handled it as a family. And, you know, obviously for me, it was more just when I'd gone in to visit her. She was telling me that she was hearing voices, and then my brother picked it up. We initially thought it was maybe something that her hearing aid was picking up, yep. But then we realised it was more serious. And so then it's just a question of, you know, kind of organising a rota with the family for who's going to go in and see her on various occasions. But I think one of the things you've got to recognise is not everybody is dealing with it in the circumstance I'm in. Not everybody has other caregivers that are available. And again, that's something that, you know, we're kind of keen that people share with us when they're forced into a situation where they have to deal with a family crisis. I like to think we're the kind of firm where colleagues can step in and help out. And I think, you know, on one occasion, it wasn't so much a mental health issue, but it was, and one of my blogs recognised the colleagues of an individual in a team whose son had, terminal illness and subsequently died. But the team, you know, basically did his job for him. Well, he helped yeah. with, he kind of dealt with the family, you know, kind of issues you had to deal with. And I think it's kind of, really, that's what a team's for. And that's what it's like being part of a team. You know, if it's, you know, me this week that needs the help, but it'll be somebody else the following week.
With the fund manager role in itself, do you think that's more susceptible to stress and perhaps mental health, you know, issues? There's so much kind of pressure on these one or two people that there's always that kind of, we still have this sort of star manager kind of feel in the industry. As much as we've tried to get away with it, it's still there. And do you think that's a negative for mental health?
Well, I think it's something you have to build resilience. And I kind of came through that route being a sort of risk taker, fund manager. And I certainly can remember getting better at it over time. So as a junior fund manager, you know, I guess as a very junior fund manager, your first few years are quite important because you don't have a longer term track record to fall back on. I can remember being, you know, really quite gloomy on various occasions when things were going against me. I think over time, you create techniques to deal with that kind of pressure. And I think part of it is, I wouldn't say I'm sort of an expert in talking about mindfulness or anything of that. If that works for people, then that's fine. But for me, it was more about just, you know, kind of reminding myself about the things that I can control and the things that I can't. And so generally over the years, I've got more judgmental on myself if I fall into an elephant trap that was foreseeable than, you know, kind of make a mistake that, you know, really has been caused by a fairly, you know, random factor that emerges. And I think in all sorts of lives, that's a good philosophy. I mean, as someone who travels, and I've recently been on a lot of flights that have been late, and I see people getting wildly worked up because the flight's delayed, and you just know it's not going to do. The plane's not going to leave any earlier. It's not going to really help them. And so that sort of mental capacity to just say, I can't control this, and therefore I'm going to refuse to allow it to upset me.
You said on LinkedIn that we need to know our limits when it comes to mental pressure. Mm. How do you judge those limits, both as an individual and for your staff?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I was talking about you know, our physical limits, yep, as well, and I don't think it's so different. I mean, I kind of one of the things I confessed in one of my blogs to staff is that I kind of I suffer from gout, which I know is joked about as rich man's disease and sort of rich living and everything else. But unfortunately, it's a genetic reality I have to deal with, right? So at the minute, I've got a bit of a sore knee, yeah, which means I can't actually run for a train at the minute if I'm a bit late, which is annoying. Just in the same way as you kind of will assess what you're fit for physically, I think you have to sort of say, sometimes look at your diary, look ahead, sort of say, seriously, am I asking too much of myself, and shouldn't I spread that out a little bit or push that trip out for a month or whatever?
So you're kind of seeing them as quite intertwined, really, your physical health and your mental health.
Well, I think your physical health starts to give you clues. I mean, for me, I'm very bad, actually, at knowing when I'm stressed. But what happens is I've got eczema, so my eczema gets worse when I'm under stress. So for me, the sort of trigger is when my skin starts to go flaky, I'm probably needing to pull back a bit and get some more sleep, yeah, and take a bit more time to relax.
How have you seen sort of attitudes to mental health change in the industry? You've obviously, you know, been in the industry,
yeah,
for quite a while, and mental health perhaps has been kind of, I wouldn't want to say popularised, but put to the forefront in a different way over the last 5 years. Or so.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would say it's probably been talked about a lot more, but I think in different ways. You know, when I was a junior fund manager, I learned a lot from seasoned fund managers who had borne the brunt of risk-taking for a long time, and they did give me good, solid advice. We probably just didn't talk the language of mental wellness or mental health, but effectively the tips and advice were very much aligned with trying to build that resilience. I think, probably for me, when I think back to the global financial crisis, I had a lot on at that time, and I kind of developed Bell's palsy, one side of my face, sort of, which then I remember triggered quite a lot of conversation with some of my senior colleagues saying, are you taking too much on? Do you need to sort of step back a bit, etc.? So they sort of were linking the physical with the mental, which is how I often articulate it. So I think it's always been there. I think probably it's talked a bit more explicitly about now than perhaps in the past.
Yeah. And you've been CEO of two major businesses, and how do you see the culture having an impact on mental health and the mental health of staff? Do you think that there's differences in the businesses you've been involved?
There is. I mean, I think I'm not going to draw a contrast between the two firms I've been in, because I think both of them took mental health pretty seriously. But I think the worst possible thing is where you've got this sort of culture of corporate perfection, if you like, where you're kind of just expected to get everything right. You're not meant to show any vulnerabilities, and I think that's a very, very dangerous culture to bring people into, because as I said, particularly in our industry, even if you are very, very skilled, you can be hammered by randomness. And another thing is that the opposite is true. You know, to notice my talk, I mentioned that mental wellness is dealing with successes as well as failures. And one of the things that's a big risk in our industry is when people have a success, they attribute it to skill. So I sort of look at Cathy Wood's ARC funds, for example, where, you know, kind of she bought into the hottest things that were going up. That wasn't skill, in my view, not at all. But, you know, you end up... So if she... I'm not judging her mental health, but, you know, someone who's done something, they've got lucky in the markets, if they think that's all about them and they start to imagine that they're kind of geniuses, then they're very, very vulnerable to being seriously rocked when you know, it goes the other way.
I want to move on to the sort of return to the office now. Obviously, we're in person today. And how much do you think being in person matters for asset management and for the mental health of staff?
Yeah. I mean, I think it really matters. I think some people, I mean, you know, I think some people probably don't realise what's good for them in the sense that an element of flexibility is no doubt good. And I think for me, it's about there's three things you've got to keep into balance to have a healthy firm. You've got to keep your staff need to be looking after their own work-life balance and so on, but you also need to be looking after your customers. I need to be making sure that the business is healthy and thriving. So obviously work from home has allowed staff to get a bit more work-life balance, but some of them maybe feel so attracted to not having to pay for a commute or not having to, that they're missing out on that human interaction. And so I think there may be a danger of them having the flexibility, but losing that connection with colleagues and maybe suffering from loneliness, frankly. So I think coming into an environment where you've got colleagues, there's chat beyond just the formal chat that you would have on meetings, is really important to the culture. Now we've sort of said, you know, we're kind of leaving it to, you know, to leadership teams to decide what the right mix will be between working from home and being in the office. But the business needs experienced staff to be teaching and guiding more junior staff. Mm. And that's something that happens much better in a sort of face-to-face environment. So for the good of the business, we need people to come in. And just in the same way as I look back through my career, and I'm really grateful for experienced colleagues that kind of helped me build the resilience and so on that was necessary, we need to do the same for the next generation that's coming through.
What are your views on the four-day week? Do you think the asset management industry could merge into that? And I think that would be a positive for mental health?
I mean, it might be a positive for mental health. I just don't know whether it's... I mean, I don't think it's sustainable with that. I mean, I think if everybody went to four-day week, I do think there'd be a drop in productivity. I just know that I couldn't do in 4 days what I currently do in five. I think if we went to 4 day week, we'd have to employ 20% more people. You know, I just think that's the reality. Also, of course, the markets are open 5 days, so we need to be here when the markets are open, and we need to be available when our clients want to deal with us.
Even so, on a rota system,
I mean, I'd say might work in a rota system, but we need more people. I don't believe that people are sitting with 20% free time, certainly in this business, and so it would need to be made up somewhere.
This CityWire podcast is sponsored by Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust. Scottish Mortgage invests in some of the world's most promising and exceptional companies, from healthcare breakthroughs to electric vehicles to a green energy revolution. Scottish Mortgage takes stakes in businesses shaping our future economy and society. As with any investment, capital is at risk.